The Bill Myers Show podcast is sponsored by Clouser Drilling. They've been leading the way in Southern Oregon well drilling for over 50 years. Find out more about them at clouserdrilling.com.
Here's Bill Meyer.
Welcome to Wheels Up Wednesday, or it could be Grumpy Bill Wednesday. I'm not exactly sure how it's going to be, but I'll get back to you. Only reason a little bit grumpy is that sleep is precious to me, and I had a friend butt dial me this morning at 1:30, and I have to leave the phone on because, you know, I'm on call. You know, when you're on call, that's just kind of the way it goes. So I wake up, and then I'm like staring at the clock. Okay, 1:30. All right, I can get back to sleep. I know I can get back to sleep. And then Matt the cat gets in my face, poking me in the nose and purring. In other words, feed me, Seymour. Feed me. And then, okay, that's happening too. Then do I go back to sleep? No. So finally, I don't know, like 3:30, I throw in the towel and just come in. But it's all right. It's all right. I'm going to be fine and going to be fine. Everything's going to be fine. You know that feeling, right, when you have that little dull feeling in the back of your head? But we're going to be all right. You can join the conversation, though, and maybe make my headache worse. I don't know. Or better. Just depends on what you're talking about. But join in at 770-563-3770-KMED. The email Bill at BillMyersShow.com. Eric Peters is going to join me this morning. Wheels Up Wednesday. We're going to be talking about his my Bitcoin again. And, you know, the one thing I will say about Eric Peters and yours truly is that we are consistent when it comes to Elon Musk. We didn't trust Elon Musk when the Democrats loved him and thought that he was the second coming of Jesus. And I still don't trust him and or like him, even though he's working for President Trump. And now President Trump, I guess what, throwing a sop to him yesterday, going and buying a Tesla. It's like, come on. Yeah, I know. You know, Tesla's lost about 30, 40% of it. Yeah, but Bill, Doge. It's like, this is the, I just don't quite get Republicans and conservatives who, when and arguably friendly to the Democrat person for years and years and years, decides to roll over because there's a better deal on our side because we're coming into power, you know, in this particular case. And that's the way I look at Elon Musk. This is, you know, this is a guy that got his money, that got his hundreds of billions of dollars by grifting through the United States federal government, by forcing other automobile manufacturers to pay him for the privilege of them building cars that people actually wanted to buy, rather than the politically favored Elon Musk mobiles, all right? And now because what? He decides to flip over and, you know, help us out on Doge a little bit? All's forgiven. It's all forgiven. You know, don't worry about it. It's just, I don't get. Now, I know that you want people to join your team. I get that. You want people to change and change their point of view and join the team, but it makes my teeth hurt to see President Trump throwing bones to Tesla and sopping up to it and sucking up to it. He was telling the truth a few years ago when he said it was all a scam, just like a few years ago it was also right when President Trump said cryptocurrency, it's a scam. This whole thing is a scam. But then they donate $50 million to him. And all of a sudden, we need to have a strategic cryptocurrency reserve. Ay, ay, ay. And I was happy to vote for Trump, don't get me wrong. But is this just the way it is now? Maybe that's the... See, there it is. The Grumpy Bill came out. I'm very sorry. We know that the Grumpy Bill came out in this particular case. All I have to do is read about Trump and Elon Musk. And gosh darn it, I hope they get all those Doge cuts through. Speaking of Doge cuts, the Education Department cutting its workforce of some 4,400 people by nearly 50%. They announced that last night. Reduction in force sent out. And what they're going to do, every aspect of the Department of Education is going to be affected by it. Nobody is spared. At last count, it was like 1,300 people were being cut. And because of the reduction in force rules, they get 90 days severance pay plus an extra year for every an extra week of severance pay for every year that they had served in the Department of Education. And they are talking about how this is going to return power of education to the states. Now, that sounds really good. This is an example in which I would have questioned Republicans' thinking process when it comes to the educational process. For years and years and years, we've talked about we want to get rid of the Department of Education and return education to the state. Gee, doesn't that sound great? What is returning the power of education to the state of Oregon going to do for conservative parents? Does anybody have an answer for me? Oh, you mean that Oregon gets to double down on DEI if they're no longer trying to dance to the federal grant stream funding deal that you would get through the Department of Education? Maybe. But sorry, that's Grumpy Bill coming out again this morning. I see, usually I use Grumpy Bill before Grumpy Bill London, you know, our news guy. But I'm going to be Grumpy Bill there. But what do you think that looks like? What do you think that looks like with a Department of Education being eviscerated and going away? Which, hey, listen, I would love to see all the federal agencies go away. I'm okay with that. I really am. But if you're going out there and saying, we're going to return power of education to the states. Well, the state of Oregon, it's probably not going to change too much, is it? What do you think? Or do you think that because there may be, you know, a little less grant stream funding coming through to the Department of Education, what's left of it, maybe we'll be better? We won't double down? Speaking of which, OPB reporting, and I'm going to talk with State Rep Yunker about this next hour. Governor Kotek is moving to hold Oregon schools more accountable for academic outcomes. No, I'm serious. Yes. I can't believe that you're not trusting about Governor Kotek. See, that's Grumpy Bill talking again. Leading Oregon Democrats are pushing two companion bills that aim to set stricter academic metrics for schools and lay out steps they'd have to take if they don't meet them. Governor Kotek's been saying for months, OPB reports, that Oregon public schools need more money. Okay. More money. We're at some point where some of these kids have about $15,000, $16,000, $17,000 a year more expensive than going to Cascade Christian. And somehow Cascade Christian manages to educate the kids. But yeah, Tina Kotek says we need more. Kotek, along with a fellow Democrat, Senate President Rob Wagner, Speaker of the House Julie Fahey, pushing a couple of complimentary bills forward to the legislators this week. And I guess they carry amendment proposals. It's going to be studying the adequacy of public education and school accountability. Yeah. Okay. I'll tell you what. I'm going to hold my fire here for the moment on this one. State Representative Dwayne Yunker has his own education reform bill that he's trying to get some attention to. And he says it would actually do something about it. And he actually has a number of school teachers within his family. Within the system, so kind of knows all the problems that are going in here. But it says that Governor Kotek is all wrong about this. So we'll kick that around coming up here in the next few minutes. All right. I'm going to have a little more coffee. Maybe Grumpy Bill will disappear and Nice Bill will return. I don't know. 18 minutes after 6, this is the Bill Myers Show, 770-5633. Call in. Cheer me up, okay? Let's have some fun.
If your home computer has issues, call
5875.
Call Charisse like I did or visit their showroom off Biddle Road in Medford. NoWiresNow.com. Restrictions apply. Call for details. Internet and cell phone service not provided by Dish.
Hi, I'm Paul Strandberg with Valley View Nursery, and I'm on KMED.
Valley View Nursery, Paul, great people. And I love you gardeners. I want you to come over and do gardening at my house because I hate gardening and I'm bad at it. Oh, wait a minute. That's more Grumpy Bill this morning. I'm going to get happy because we have Jeff. Hello, Jeff. How are you doing this morning? Welcome to the show.
I'm doing great, sir. How about yourself?
I'm doing fine. I'm doing better. It's good to talk to sensible people. What's on your mind?
Well, as bad as the federal education system is, and I do think it's horrible to go away, I just feel like Oregon's going to sit there and go, you think that's bad? Hold my hat, watch what we can do, and make it even more woke.
You know, especially You know, because, you know, Trump says, all right, you're doing any DEI, you're doing any woke stuff, you're not going to get any money. And then Tina Kotek says, well, we need more money for federal education. That's so she can double down, isn't it?
Yes. You know, in the Daily Courier, they listed all of, like, Southern Oregon, like, South Med. I'm in Grants Pass, and Grants Pass schools, the graduates. Was Cascade Christian in that? I don't remember if they were.
I don't think it is because it's not a public school. I don't think it shows up in those stats. So that's
why. I was just curious on the stats if they, you know, I would assume they give a much better education than everybody else.
But. Well, and I would assume that if your parents are spending $15,000, $16,000 a year to send the kid to school, the kid's probably actually going to school, unlike the public school. So
yes,
yeah, you have.
But I just feel that, you know, once if it does go to the state, I think a lot of states will improve. And I don't think the education here will get worse, but I think the wokeness and all the DEI crap will just go out the window and just like go really bad.
Yeah, because right now the only restriction on it is that, oh gosh, we have to get rid of this stuff because the grant stream funding. Well, then if Kotek's just going to raise school money going into the system on the state side, then they don't have to worry. It could be DEI and LGBTQ and transgender surgeries. You can do everything they want. Yeah, at that point.
Yeah.
In fact, they'll probably be like a hall pass to jump on the plane and go over to OHSU and have your genitalia cut off there as part of gender-affirming care. You know, just make it a lot easier in the public school.
They'll probably have a mobile unit that'll go to your school for you.
Oh, like that's that. Right. Right. Kind of like a portable sawmill, right?
You can't come to us. No problem. We'll come to you.
Yikes. I hope we're wrong on this one, though, Jeff. Okay, thanks for the call, all right? Let me go to Jerry. Hello, Jerry. How are you doing this morning?
Good, Bill.
Good to hear from you. What's up?
Well, hey, I can be a little grumpy at times, too. So I understand how you feel.
We'll just talk it through, and I'll get through it, and the caffeine will hit in, and we'll kick in. And
There you go.
I'll be fine. I'll be fine.
Anyway. I believe I heard this morning on the news that we've given Kyiv back intelligence and military aid.
That doesn't sound like a real good idea, does it?
Well, I'm assuming that's true. I believe I did hear that on, you know, the shows that are on before yours.
Yeah. I thought I heard something vaguely about that, too, on Stigall a little bit earlier, that something like that had happened. Yeah, I think you're right. I think it happened, but I haven't looked into it.
I believe that's a mistake. And here's why. I believe the war could be ended if we stop supplying Ukraine. And if I were Putin, I would tell Mr. Trump and his administration, listen, I'm going to tell you the truth about this war. We didn't start it. NATO started it for the last 30 years. They've been coming toward us. You know, and then started overthrowing the government in Ukraine, your Democrat buddies. And then started killing some ethnic Russians down in the Donbass or wherever it was. Mm-hmm. I don't recall.
Now, Skousen, you know Joel Skousen, I've talked with him before. He says that that's the typical line that are coming out of constitutional conservative types. And he says we're all wrong because he says that the fall of Russia was actually a fake job, a head fake job, and that Putin really does have... although I don't know how he can do it. He's not exactly a rich country. But that, you know, he wants to expand territory, and he's the one we got to worry about. What do you think?
Yeah, well, I don't know, Bill. I meant, where are they expanding? And that would be my question. You know, I don't see Russia as the former Soviet Union looking to go through Hungary with tanks, like they did in the 50s.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. What's Mr. Skousen concerned about? Now they're linked up with China, their next-door neighbor. And
now, see, that's what I'm concerned about. And what Skousen is saying, that what it's really all about is that China and Russia team up to eventually take us on in World War III once they are thoroughly strengthened economically and militarily. And that makes sense. I can understand that. Which also means to me that national security, one of the best things we could do then is to kind of drive a wedge in that Chinese-Russian partnership, don't you think?
I agree. You know what, Bill? if it were me, now I'm just speaking for myself, obviously.
Yeah.
And people will probably disagree with me, and that's fine. I would work out something with Russia. As Trump mentioned in one of his interviews by some reporter, Russia has a lot of resources. Why instead of Ukraine, why don't we tap into some of those Russian resources and do business with them?
Yeah, win-win.
I know they have sanctions on them.
Yeah.
And
but you see, the sanctions have caused us problems, too, because here it is. Trump says, I want everybody to be using the dollar as the reserve currency. Well, who wants to use the reserve currency if the president, if you do something they don't like, is going to beat you over the head with you using the dollar and then penalizing you? You can't do that. It doesn't work.
Absolutely. And I do believe the BRICS will be a force to be reckoned with. As Jim Rickards said, they already have a new currency. It's called gold.
Yeah, notice
that's
the
currency.
I noticed the price of that still continues to grind up within a pretty $2,900 plus range. Okay.
And if I were Putin, I'd also say, hey, listen, I don't want this to go on, but we're not going to accept these terms here. And these European countries that you went in here to be peacekeepers, no, that's not going to happen. You know why? Because they're the same ones who've been supporting Ukraine, killing us.
Fair enough. Jerry?
Peacekeepers right here on our border? Forget it.
All right, Jerry the Bull. Good take. We appreciate your call. You be well. And thanks for helping me be a little less grumpy. Always appreciate that. All right. Let me see what else we got going on here. Senator Jeff Merkley. Oh, Jeff Merkley is my favorite. Absolutely my favorite. Democratic committee members say EPA Administrator Zeldin's illegal plan to gut the federal agency is poised to torpedo environmental safeguards while undermining the Constitution. I would dare say the environmental safeguards have been undermining the Constitution for quite some time at this point, guys. That's kind of the way I look at it. Obviously, Senator Merkley and I would disagree here. But, you know, he's a senator, a senior member, rather, of the Senate Environment and Public Works Committee. And he joined all the other Democrats. All the Democrats have gotten together on this one, demanding answers from the EPA about his illegal scheme to gut the agency. In other words, is it going to be the illegal scheme to maybe say that carbon dioxide is not a poisonous gas, is not killing the planet, is actually a part of plant food? That sort of thing, and that you don't have any real evidence that human-produced carbon dioxide is killing the planet. If anything, it's greening the planet. It wouldn't be something like that, would it, Berserkly? I don't know. But then at that, I'm not a scientist. I'm just a talk show host. But there we go. All right. Ontario, Canada agrees to suspend electricity tariffs after Trump threatens to increase the tariffs once again. I would say he's winning on this particular one. Didn't take long. Town Hall reporting the Canadian province of Ontario back down. They threatened to put a big surcharge on electricity to three United States states as President Donald Trump threatened to double the tariffs that he'd already placed on Canadian goods, rather. Doug Ford, remember that guy? Wasn't that the fat fellow that got in? I'm trying to think. What he got in trouble a number of years ago, right? Yeah. I forget the details. I'm going to have to look that up again. But anyway, Doug Ford has managed to rehabilitate himself, apparently. And the U.S. Secretary of Commerce, Howard Lutnick, released a statement late last night saying they have come to an understanding. I don't know if it was one of those things like an understanding like in the Godfather movie, like either your signature or your brains will be on the contract. Remember that that part of that great movie? I don't know, but still, we'll see. We're going to dive into the rest of it here. Eric Peters joins me, Wheels Up Wednesday afternoons, and I just appreciate you waking up here. This is the Bill Myers Show, 770-5633, and you can call and talk to Eric if you have some questions and comments, maybe a car you're looking at too, all coming up.
As a business owner, you likely do a lot of driving around town, so turn your business vehicle into an attention-getting rolling billboard. The Wash Buggy Wrap Lab brands and restyle.
Motor financing excludes tax, license, title, and 250 dealer doc fees. See dealer for details.
You're hearing the Bill Myers Show on 106.3 KMED. Now Bill wants to hear from you. 541-770-5633. That's 770-KMED.
It's golden years. Golden years. We're always talking about that. The Trump administration. And we're going to be digging into the golden years with Eric Peters, epautos.com, automotive journalist and genius. Eric, Welcome the heck back to the program here on a grumpy Bill Wheels Up Wednesday here, but I'm doing okay. You know, I was I opened up the show this morning saying that you were going to come on and talking about how my teeth hurt when I'm looking at what's going on with the Trump administration and Elon Musk. I am glad to have waste, fraud, and abuse detailed up, right? I'm fine. Let's go ahead. Let's rip it out by the roots. He's doing good work on that particular sort of thing. But I think where I have lost my faith, I guess, I don't want to say faith, I never had any faith, is that I've been really consistent that I think that Elon Musk is a wolf in sheep's clothing. He was a wolf in sheep's clothing when the Democrats loved him, and I still think he's a wolf in sheep's clothing when he's working with the Republicans. But just because he's working for our team now, I'm not just going to – I gave Trump my – I guess, honestly here, Eric, I gave Trump my vote, not my brain, okay?
That's very well said.
Okay.
Yeah, boy, where do we even begin with this? I guess we should preface this by saying – or by talking about this really interesting inversion where 4 years ago, the left absolutely venerated Elon Musk. You know, Musk was their guy. And, of course, conversely, people on our side, the right, loosely speaking, despised him because they regarded him rightly as the arch-grifter of the green grift. Well, all of a sudden, fast forward, and now the left despises him because he's allied himself with the bad old orange man.
Mm-hmm.
And at the same time, the right all of a sudden regards this guy as some kind of avatar of capitalism. And it, as you say, it makes my teeth hurt. And then just yesterday, we find out that apparently orange is the new green. Trump comes out not only in defense of Musk, but in defense of Tesla. And he calls it the great American car company. And he announces that he's going to buy a Tesla, which tells me that he has absolutely no comprehension whatsoever of the green grift, or he's the most cynical hypocrite imaginable.
Okay, or he understands how cynical it is, but he's helping him so much in his administration with Doge, it's almost a sop to Elon Musk because he sees him in big trouble. You know, here in Oregon, we're smashing windows and throwing firebombs at Tesla dealerships and things like that. And I think that's horrible. I'm not it.
Of course. You know, I'm with you. You know, the destruction of property, private property, is criminal and ought to be prosecuted. But I think a good way to understand this is to look at what also happened yesterday, which was Trump attacking Representative Massey of Kentucky because he didn't toe the Trumpian line. And what that tells me is that loyalty matters more than principles. If you obsequiously worship the orange man, then everything is good. But if you question anything the orange man has, the guy turns on you and will shiv you in the back just as quickly as any leftist would for deviating from the orthodoxy.
Okay, well, we're only going to be doing a few more months of experiments, turning the frogs or the mice gay or whatever it is that Alex Jones was talking about. Okay, well,
That's all great, but it's just so exasperating. You know, I'm with you. I'm very happy that Musk has been publicly exposing the fraud at USAID and elsewhere. That's great. That's wonderful. I'm glad that Trump came out and said something that had become controversial, which is that if you're born a male, well, then you're a man. And, you know, wearing women's clothing does not turn you into a woman. All of that is great. It's a refreshing breath of sanity. But at the same time, it doesn't mean I'm just going to stand there like a clapping seal for whatever Trump says and does and say, orange man, good.
And I think that's where I am, too. And that's where I get myself sideways with some people, too. Because, like I said, I gave him my vote. I didn't give him my brain. And the point being, though, is that Tesla is still the grift. And he has an agenda, and a lot of people on the right, I don't think, understand that really the main reason that Elon Musk wants to cut government spending is not because he has any problem with government spending before, because it didn't really matter to him, I think. The whole idea is that the next grift for him is going to Mars. He's been very open about it, and he wants the United States to pay for it and get involved with SpaceX and going to Mars. That's his thing. This is the same guy that would like to implant neural links on all the people and have us just join the singularity, I think.
Yeah, I think people ought to take into account and consider that Musk has yet to repudiate the whole climate change narrative or his stance on carbon taxes. He was one of the people who came out and said that carbon ought to be taxed. If he still believes those things, how can they possibly entertain the idea that this guy is a friend of ours? He's not. He's a dangerous guy. He's a smart guy. Who has bull-weaveled himself, held himself up to Trump.
And he's doing some good things right now, but that does not make him a friend. And the right, you know, it's almost like the right wing is so desperate for friends in the famous world, whether it's a Hollywood or you know, someone in, you know, the big captain of industry like Elon Musk, that sort of thing, that they'll overlook these realities. And I just, hey, you can't trust the guy. All right.
Well, I think it's probably part of a broader issue, which is that people have been beaten down now for so many years, especially during the last 4 years, that they're completely desperate to hear or see anything that indicates to them that, oh, look, a savior is here. It's going to get better rather than worse. You know, it's the Stalin's chicken thing. You know the story about Stalin's chicken, right?
Oh, yeah, when he kept plucking the chicken and then the chicken ended up buddying up to him to stay warm, right? He did it in front of the other apparatchiks, if I recall.
Yeah, yeah.
Right?
He would roughly pull out the bird's feathers, and of course the bird would run away, and then he would sprinkle a few grains of feed at his feet, and the chicken would come back to peck at the grains that were put at Stalin's feet.
That's a bit the way the right wing has been treated for a long, long time. Our right wing, independent, if you want to call it that. Feathers getting plucked, and the moment something looks good, all's forgiven, and you just rush right over. Is that kind of it?
Right.
What you're talking about?
Yes, absolutely. You know, I would like to see Trump come out and say, you know what, Elon Musk and Tesla will have to compete on the merits with other car companies. No more subsidies, no more federal regulations that favor electric vehicles and punish vehicles that aren't electric.
And Musk, by the way, said he's in favor of getting rid of the subsidies. But, of course, it's easy to do that after you've got your hundreds of billions of dollars in subsidies from the taxpayers over the years to build your company.
It's astounding.
Yeah.
And until the regulations are taken away, it makes no meaningful difference, because right now the regulations are set up such that the automakers are essentially forced to produce these EVs, whether they can sell them or not. And until that changes, nothing is going to change.
Okay, so that part was still some rough justice here. We have to wake people up. Just understand, hey, I'm going to be happy to see the Doe stuff, and I hope he's successful on that. And then after that, get out, okay?
Yep.
You know, that's kind of the way it is, because his agenda is to get taxpayers to pay for his space trips. He's been open about it, and it's like people have sort of ignored that, I guess. Is that?
Yeah, and isn't it affronterous? How much is he worth? What, $60 billion, something like that? Why doesn't he, if he wants to go to Mars, I laud that. That's great. Use his own money. You know, get some investors. Line them up. You know, that was my critique with regard to Tesla. I don't have an issue with electric cars. Look, if he thinks that there's a market for electric cars, if anybody thinks there's a market for electric cars, line up investors, people who want to put their money into this project, make the things, offer them for sale, and if people buy them, I'll clap. That's great. That's America.
Exactly.
This is not America.
But, you know, modern-day capitalism has decayed to the point where capitalism is getting taxpayers to pay for your sunk costs, and then you keep the profits. I mean, that's
yeah, that's not capitalism, though. It's really important to not use that term in this context. It's rent-seeking cronyism is what it is. It's corporatism. It's the merger of the state and big companies. That's all it is. It's got as much to do with capitalism as the vaccines had to do with preventing the spreading and getting of the Rona.
All right. Hey, we got some great news, though, when it comes to the Hemi. We'll talk about that here in just a moment. So we had that part, which is that's the irritating grumpy Bill and grumpy Eric part of the program. And then we'll continue into the good stuff about the Hemi and a bunch of other stuff, including car reviews. And if you have a question or comment, 770-5633. This is the Bill Myers Show on KMED.
Wipeout hunger's over.
To schedule your free consultation.
You're hearing the Bill Myers Show on 106.3 KMED.
Wheels Up Wednesday with Eric Peters, the number 770-5633. Got a car you're looking at, question about a car, maybe a comment on what is going on with the new vehicles. Hey, before we get into the good news on the Hemi here, Eric, some headwinds for the automakers that we wanted to mention. This has to do with an article you have on EP Autos. It's called Epic Default. What is going on there right now? Huh? Could you kind of set that out? This is the financial side of the world.
Yeah,
right?
One of those canaries in the coal mine having to do with defaults on car loans, both new and used. And they're up significantly, and not just among people who are on the margins and who have poor credit. And it's completely understandable, because in addition to the fact that the average new car payment is now about $734, the cost of everything has exploded. And I think a lot of people weren't prepared for that. And so, you know, they assumed that whatever they were earning would cover all of their expenses, not just their car payment. And now, of course, they're paying significantly more for things like food, utilities, car insurance, and all of these things together make it such that they're no longer able to make their payments. And so there's probably going to be a big wave of defaults on car loans coming shortly, and that's another piece of bad news, unfortunately, that'll make us even grumpier this morning.
Yeah, well, you know, I don't like to to talk about this going on, but this is reality. And I'm wondering, though, if do you think that given the situation, given the challenges in the economy right now, that the dealerships or the loan companies, maybe it be the loan companies really making this decision, right? I don't think the dealers are mostly doing their own financing,
no,
do they?
No, because they pawn that off generally, unless it's, you know, financed through the manufacturer.
Okay.
The lender that comes in and, assumes the loan, and at that point, the dealer, washes their hands of it.
Is there a possibility that maybe these, whoever owns the note on these cars, given the economy right now, might be more willing to work with people? Because almost the last thing you want to do is try to foreclose and then sell in a situation like that. I don't know. What
do you
think?
They may, but it's interesting to me because everything has a lag time built into it, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So what we're experiencing right now is essentially something that was set in motion several years ago.
This is a hangover from the Biden administration, really, is what we're looking at.
Yeah, yeah. Right? I mean, the reason why everybody's paying 25 or 50% more for car insurance has to do with the Biden-era pushing of electric cars that dramatically increased the cost of the average new vehicle, as well as the cost of replacing and repairing it. And that is manifesting now in our car insurance policies. And, all of these things are tied together and making things unaffordable. And so how do we deal with this? What do we do? I don't know. Vehicles now are out of hand expensive. You can't practically buy anything any longer that's not a tiny little nothing for less than $30,000. And that's not counting the cost of insuring it and all the other things that go along with owning it. It's really bad news out there for both the industry and for us.
I think a lot of folks haven't realized just how expensive insurance has become because of the expense of the new vehicles, and because and the way they're designed in many cases, that even minor parking lot dings, they're designed to absorb lots of force. And so you get quite a bit of crumpling pretty quickly. It protects the people inside the car, but it also leads to higher collision damages for what would be a minor accident, really. Wouldn't that be fair?
Well, you don't even get crumpling anymore because the front and rear end of these cars are now made of plastic and they just tear right off. And the really exasperating thing is that, I'll give you an example, a personal one. I don't own one of these vehicles. I have an 02 Nissan Frontier. I haven't gotten a ticket. I haven't filed a claim, nothing. But yet my insurance costs have literally doubled in the last 2 years. Why? Not because of anything I've done, but because of these vehicles out there where if I happen to bump into one of these vehicles that has a plastic fascia, that's what they call them now, mm-hmm. not a bumper, and it tears off, which it will because it's held in by clips, and all the little cameras and little plastic pieces there have to be replaced, it's $4,000 or $5,000 for that.
Oh, so that's driving a lot of this then, yeah.
Yes, absolutely.
And you look at the way that cars are designed now, in which you have the very specific model glass headlight, when you used to have like the round or the rectangular headlights that cost $20 a piece when you replace them. Now, if you hit someone's headlight, it's several hundred dollars to get that fixed, isn't it?
Yeah, and God help you if stone chip a windshield. I had one of my readers post that they had that happen to them. Can't remember what the make and model was, but it was a new vehicle. And because the windshield is part of the advanced driver assistance system, it has stuff embedded in it. The cost to replace the windshield was about $2,000.
That's unbelievable for a piece of glass, huh? Does it have electronics embedded in it, like the heads-up display sort of thing? Is that what that's all about?
Not the heads-up display, but if you look at a typical new car, and what you'll see is not just glass. Up up toward the roof line, you'll see typically this black box with things coming out of it that's embedded into the glass. That's part of they'll typically have sensors in there, and it's part of the advanced driver assistance stuff, which, by the way, is no longer optional. It's all mandatory now in all the vehicles, not mandatory by the government, but mandatory in terms of the automakers just decided to anticipate the mandate and make all this stuff part of the standard equipment package.
Interesting stuff over on epautos.com, epautos.com. Eric Peters with me. Let me go to line three. Hi, good morning. Who's this? Welcome.
Well, good morning. Strangely enough, it's Deplorable Patrick.
Hello, DP. And what's your question for Eric or comment? Go ahead.
Well, I'll tell you, I was up really late last night, and I'm sleeping in today. I'm asleep right now, but I'm not too bad at talking in my sleep. So I just want to take it in a little different direction and talk a little automotive trivia. And combine it with a complaint, and I'm kind of flying without a net while I talk in my sleep because I'm going
to... Okay, if you could just get to it, though, that would be nice, okay?
Well, back in the late 50s and early 60s, these Dodge cars had a wide brake pedal, like 8 inches wide,
mm-hmm.
Do you guys know why that is and why they don't have it now?
The 8-inch wide brake pedal? No, I don't know. Do you, Eric?
Well, as a general thing, cars with automatic transmissions have wider brake pedals than cars with manuals. You know, for example, my 76 Trans Am, it's an automatic, and I've had the exact same car with a manual, and the manual version has a brake pedal that's probably half the size of the one with the automatic, just because there's only so much room for the pedals.
Okay, so what do you say about the reason why they're gone? What do you say?
I was a kid in the automotive shop, and we were talking about that. That was because they had power brakes, and in case the power brakes would fail, a woman could put 2 feet on the pedal and still stop the car even if power brakes failed. And now you still get a narrow pedal even with power brakes, and screw it if your power brakes go off, which we've had happen. Don Thumler and I were loading the car by coasting it downhill to load it on the trailer one day.
Yeah.
And when he got ready to put on the brakes, it went right over the front of the trailer. We had our hands full with that. But
well, the good news is that since I think it's either 64 or 65, I can't remember the model year, but after that point, all new cars had dual reservoir master cylinders, which simply means that the front and rear brakes were separate, so that you might lose the front brakes, you might lose the rear brakes, but you wouldn't lose both of them at the same time.
I think what Patrick was talking about, though, Eric, was the power assist going away and having to use much, much more force on it. But,
oh, yeah, sure.
Yeah, point well taken.
Yeah.
Hey, DP, thanks for the trivia on the wide brake pedal. Let me go to line three, or no, four, rather. Hi, you're on with Eric. Who's this? Good morning.
Yes, this is Pete from North Valley.
Pete, Eric, what's up in North Valley, huh?
Yeah, driving a Datsun 70, Datsun 240Z. And I don't drive it every month during the winters, so I store it a little bit. What fuel would be best to store in that tank, winter or summer fuel?
A 1970 Datsun 240. Great car, by the way. Wonderful car. It's one of the early ones, right, Eric?
Yeah, it is. That's a classic that's rapidly appreciating. They're just great cars. But the best gas to put in that car or any car from that vintage is non-ethanol gas. Go to, what's the name of the site? Puregas.com, I think it is. And you should be able to find somewhere in your area a station that sells 100% gasoline. In other words, not 10% ethanol. You don't want ethanol in the tank.
Right.
I would use that. And, ideally put a tap on the fuel system so that you can run the carburetor dry when you decide to store it for several months if you're going to do that.
Okay. Great. I appreciate that because, like I said, I don't drive it, you know, in the winter very much, and I just don't want it to deteriorate any more than it has to. I know that the rubber lines seem to have a problem with any of the fuels that I've been storing it, but I haven't gone that route.
Oh, yeah. The ethanol stuff is really bad news for those older cars, and it's not just the carburetors and the fuel pumps. It's also the steel lines, the fuel lines and the tank. The ethanol will rapidly rust them from the inside out. And then you get rust inside your gas that gets sucked into the fuel system, and it's a nightmare. You want to avoid that at all costs.
Yeah, so what you want to do, Pete, definitely pure gasoline. And I know that in Medford, as an example, the town pump has non-alcohol gasoline. They always put it up there. It's what, 50, 60, maybe 70 cents more a gallon, maybe a buck more a gallon. But
yeah, but, you know, this is a classic that's not being driven all the time. So, you know, you top it off, you know, fill up the tank. And that's another thing I would advise, filling up the tank so you don't have a partially full tank, which will accelerate the accumulation of moisture in the tank.
Eric, do you have a favorite fuel preservation formula for cars
I'll use stable sometimes, but I find that just avoiding the ethanol gas, and when you're dealing with things like a portable generator or lawn equipment, I try to run the carburetors dry before storage so that
Absolutely.
It's not sitting there with the fuel in the carburetor.
Absolutely. Hey, Pete, good luck with that 240Z. Bring it by the station sometime. I love those vehicles. I had a friend that had one in high school when it was still like maybe 5-6 years old at that point. It was a great car. And, you know, I can see why it got so popular at that time and then was underappreciated there for a while. And I don't think the later iterations like the 380Zs and stuff like that, I don't think people are going to care about those to the same extent. Do you?
No, not at all. You know, they got really expensive. They got very heavy. And like so many things that are new, overly complicated. Whereas the original Z cars, they had that great inline six. You pop the hood and there it was, readily accessible. And almost anybody who was interested in learning a few basic mechanical things could service the car completely and wouldn't have to pay somebody to do it.
Now, up on EP Autos today, brand new article, Return of the Hemi. This is some good news. I'm really glad to hear this because we were wondering what was going to be going on with Stellantis, which is what Dodge and Jeep and Ram truck and all that kind of stuff, because a lot of them have been kind of circling the drain because of the EV mandates that they were doing, and people just weren't buying the EVs from them. That's just the way it is. So what happens then with the Hemi?
Well, it looks like it's coming back, which it couldn't come soon enough. Stellantis is kind of in the same shape the Titanic was after it hit the iceberg, and this is an attempt to patch the hole before the whole thing goes under.
Mm-hmm.
They made the disastrous mistake of pulling the V8 out of the lineup and, of course, turning the Charger and the Challenger into a device called the Charger. And they're not selling for the obvious reason. People don't want devices, especially from Dodge.
Yeah, you don't buy a Dodge Charger to have it go hum. That's just not it. You know, that's
right,
not...
exactly. And, you know, the Ram truck, when it got redesigned, I guess it was in 2019, I think, the current iteration of it, it was really well received. People loved it. They started selling really well. And then last year they decided to pull the V8 out of it in favor of this new inline six. And I'm not maligning the inline six. It's not a bad engine by any means. It's beside the point. People who buy that truck want a V8, period.
You also want the grunt of the V8, right? You also don't want it to have the turbocharger to make the power,
well,
right?
Again, in defense of the six makes more power than the old V8 did,
mm-hmm.
and it's perfectly capable of pulling a heavy load and doing all the work, but it doesn't sound like a V8. It's not a V8. You know, that's the bottom line. The people who want those trucks want that kind of an engine, and that, you know, that's a case of Stellantis trying to force feed something to their buyer demographic that their buyer demographic doesn't have to buy.
Yeah.
Because they can go to Ford or they can go to GM, and they can still get a V8 truck, and that's what many of them have been doing. Now, the interesting thing is, not only are they bringing back the Hemi, they're bringing back Tim Kuniskis, who was the guy who used to be in charge over at Dodge and who departed after the V8 left. And so he's been charged with trying to save Ram from the abyss, and part of that plan apparently is bringing back the V8.
Yeah, it kind of reminds me of those old George Bush signs. Miss me yet? Right?
Right.
I guess they did. All right. Return of the Hemi.
Wonderful.
Yeah.
But, you know, at the same time, the worry I have is that it's going to still be extraordinarily expensive. It's probably going to be the case that a V8 Ram is going to cost you $60,000, and that's not going to help. I think what they really ought to consider doing is bringing something back like the old Dakota, which was, you know, they considered it a mid-sized at the time, but it's still a full-size truck by historic standards. Bring that back in a work truck form with the V8. Sell it for $27,000, and they won't be able to make them fast enough.
Exactly. I would agree with you. And I know, you know, plenty of men and women would want those, and especially work trucks. You got it.
Mm-hmm.
Let me go to next line here on Eric Peters' Wheels Up Wednesday on KMED. Hi, who's this? Good morning.
This is Tom.
Hey, Tom. Question, comment, go ahead.
Good morning. Yeah, I have a couple of Z cars, 280 Zs,
mm-hmm.
77 and a 78 and a 79. Maybe a ZX and a 79. The 79 that I have still burns the regular leaded fuel. It isn't restricted to unleaded only. I have a parked in a garage.
Yeah.
I think it's garage.
So it sounds like you're the go-to guy if somebody needs their vintage Z car repaired, huh? You're the guy?
Well, I've had a whole bunch of Z cars, that's for sure, over the years. You know, you talked about that brake pedal. My dad invented that. Brake pedal, that low brake pedal, wide brake pedal.
Oh, yeah?
He back in, yes, he had a Cadillac Coupe de Ville, 1950 Coupe de Ville, and he modified it. He didn't do it, the modification. He had it done, but they cut a hole in the floor. They put a rod. They even had to cut a hole through the frame, a round hole to put a rod to somehow, and the reason he went through this whole thing was you can get your foot on a brake pedal that lower to the floor, for one thing, and you could easily use your left foot
To help out
on the brake.
Yeah, you know, it sounds like there was actually some interesting developments to get that wide brake pedal so that way you could give it extra oomph if you needed it back in the day. Hey, what's your favorite part about driving the vintage Z, though? You don't mind me asking.
Well, I guess the questions you could ask, the people spot the car with original paint. It's beautiful. Never been out in the sun.
Wow.
You know, one car's got 17,000 miles on it, and the other car's got 32,000 miles.
Great story. Hey, I appreciate you you sharing that, Tom. Thanks for the call.
Right? Bill, that car, by the way, was kind of a poor man's alternative to a Jaguar E-Type.
And that's what everybody said back at that time. It's like it was the same kind of look, you know, the one thing I do remember, last time I drove a Z car, because I'm really broad of shoulder. I don't know if you are, but I'm really broad of shoulder. Mm-hmm. It did feel a little cramped for me at that point. I don't know.
Yeah, but, you know, again, it was a sports car. You know, I've been in a Jaguar E, too, and, you know, it's not exactly the most roomy thing in the world. Neither is a Miata, but they are all such fun to drive.
And that's it. Fun. Capital F for sure. Hey, what did you think about the Nissan Murano? And that's what you put in the car review section for this week. And
yeah, there's good and there's bad. The Murano's all new for 2025. Now, the Murano is one of the oldest of the cars in its class. It dates way back to, I think, 2003, you know, when there weren't that many crossovers. That whole, especially in the mid-sized class, the Lexus RX was kind of the first that came out. Mm-hmm. So it's been around a long time, and they're trying to refresh it and renew buyer interest in it. And on the upside, you know, if you look at it in terms of what it comes with, its features, its equipment, you can get it with quilted leather and massaging seats for $10,000, $20,000 less than a luxury brand crossover. So it compares very, very, very favorably to something like a Lexus RX. On the downside, it's afflicted with a compliance engine. You know, it used to come with a V6, just like the Lexus RX 350. The Lexus RX 350 no longer comes with a V6. It comes with a little turbo, little four-cylinder turbo.
Okay.
Now, this thing comes with not just a turbo 4, but a variable compression turbo 4.
So the challenge could be complexity and longevity, right?
Yeah, you know, and what's the benefit? You know, I appreciate the engineering brain sweat that went into it. It's a very interesting engine design. I've got some details in the article as well as some schematics that show people how it works. But what's the upside? It makes less horsepower than the old V6, and it doesn't get any better gas mileage.
But it does put out less carbon.
There you go. That's the only reason. That's it. You know, because they can comply with federal so-called emission standards that increasingly have nothing to do with pollution. It just has to do with this boogeyman about carbon dioxide.
By the way, has the EPA been tamed yet by the new Trump guy or not? Do we know?
Not as far as I can tell. Nothing substantive. What's happened is it's kind of idling now. You know, Lee Zeldin, the new EPA guy, hasn't done anything aggressive, but have the regs been dialed back, let alone removed? No, not yet. So until that happens, all this is a temporary pause.
Yeah, our senator, one of our senators, Jeff Merkley, out there, he's denouncing the scheme to cripple the EPA. Yeah. The environment will be destroyed if anybody tries to rein in the regulatory apparatchiks there. Oh, boy.
Yeah, just like, you know, your kids are going to become illiterate and innumerate if they get rid of the Federal Department of Education. Wait a minute. Gee, hasn't that already happened?
Yeah. Have you looked at the school rankings in the state of Oregon? We'll get back to you on that one, Eric, okay?
Mm-hmm.
Hey, for next week, what are you going to review? Do you know yet, or has it yet arrived?
Yeah, I do, actually. It's an interesting new car. It's a new car, literally. It's a Kia K4, which is the vehicle that Kia is going to replace the Forte with.
Oh.
And here's what's cool about it. It's an affordable car, and it's a car. It's not a crossover. It starts around $21,000, which is a breath of fresh air in these times, isn't it? I'm really looking forward to getting a deeper dive into it, and we'll have some more about that up on the site, and we can talk about it next week.
All right, we'll do that. Looking forward to the review. Thanks so much, Eric. EPAutos.com. Drive freely, my friend. We'll see you next week. Okay?
You bet.